Oh, baby, how do you love? All I need is my love. I say I'm gonna get high. Powell Kreese, Illustra Richardson are with us today talking about the upcoming Chain of Parks Art Festival in April. It is going to be fantabulous. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. Illustra Richardson, this year's cover artist. And then in the second hour, Steve Bamer, our good friend, has been with us so many times, talking about Leading Age Southeast and what is going on to care for Florida's senior citizens.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 75 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Well, my friend, always a pleasure to have you on board when we have opportunity to talk with people here and about, people like Steve Bamer. That guy, what a resource for you and I in so many different ways, but all of those ways having to do with how we care for the senior members of our firm, we'll say. That is to say, our elderly, our senior family members, aunts and uncles and moms and dads, or a friend, you know, senior care. It's almost, it doesn't say enough, right? Senior care sounds rather small in my mind. When you talk in detail with a guy like Steve Bamer, particularly, about the magnitude of what that really looks like in the real world and among his colleagues and the members of this remarkable organization, now called Leading Age Southeast, because Leading Age Florida took it upon themselves to merge with the similar organizations then in Alabama and Louisiana, Mississippi. And so a bigger footprint, more opportunity for service, more responsibility, but even more interestingly enough, more conversations about a lot of the same topics. We won't go into it now, but you definitely want to stay with me in this second hour of today's broadcast, because we're going to have Steve with us for that entire hour talking about what is going on. And it's a conversation that I think will open you and I up to a better informed way of looking at how it is that we care for the members of our family who can no longer very well provide for themselves. I mean, if that's your situation right now, I'll stop, because you know, no need to preach to the choir. But the fact is, whether or not I'm in those circumstances myself, maybe I'm the one needing care, and you might be quick to say, yeah, well, we've known that. All kinds of needs in my life that go unmet. Somebody needs to take care of this guy, right? Okay, enough of the jokes. But the point is, if it's not now, it's certainly coming at some point in your family, in your life, with
this determination to try to provide adequate care. Well, that's the operative word, isn't it? And we're going to learn from Steve that, our assumptions about what is adequate, our definitions culturally are shifting towards more and more demand for the kinds of resources that we're expecting, that we've become accustomed to. Well, then it ends up being the responsibility then of the providers, these companies, profit or nonprofit, that purport to carry on that mission and who are the purveyors of those services, and doing so with a kind of no man's land at stake, where the kind of quality they want to provide can't be afforded by the people who are the residents. Their resources for the kind of professional service, the help that they need, the staffing requirements, is a challenge. And so we'll get Steve to help us better understand what's going on. Great that they have made this move by bringing together Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi with Florida. Lots to learn, lots to share there. In the first hour, of course, we're going to take some time to celebrate the coming of the Chain of Parks Art Festival, always highly anticipated. We're looking forward to it. And Tallahassee Talks will be there. Don't know that we'll be able to be there live. We've done that in years past, where we do a live broadcast coming to you from the parks. And it's remotely possible, no pun intended. But the fact is that there's just not as much available space. Why? Well, because this dadgum arts festival just keeps growing bigger and bigger. And this year, no exception. And so it's harder to find real estate that isn't already spoken for. Nonetheless, we will be there in our capacity as a broadcast to talk with some of the folks that will be making their way to that festival. That's coming up in April. As of today, we've got Powell Kreese and Illustre Richardson, who happens to be a remarkably talented artist. We get to know him a little bit. And he is his work is featured as this year's cover art. Yeah, Illustre Richardson, what a guy. Man, you're going to love getting to hear from him. All that's coming up here in the first hour. I should also bring to your attention that in March, as we are celebrating Women's History Month, Leroy Collins Leon County Public Library System is doing their part. You may have heard me talk about this to some degree. They have this Women in Aviation scavenger hunt. That's pretty cool. Just telling you some things I've already shared with you. But as a reminder, and they have, speaking of, art exhibitions going on throughout the month, various locations. Artists like Kim Campbell, her work is displayed there at the Bruce J. Host Northeast Branch. And on the East Side Branch, you've got Mary Liz Tippin Moody with her watercolors. See here? So the library's doing their part in celebrating Women's History Month with these various art installations. Let's see here. And then at the Perry, Dr. B.L. Perry Jr. Branch Library, you have Finer Womanhood Month. Yeah, going on there. A display from the Zeta Phi Beta Sorority. Okay, so you got the point, right? Good. Moving on. What else we got here? Some more interesting news. Oh, this is cool. The Inclusion Cafe. You may recall we were able to bring attention to this here a couple of months back with Bill Shack, founder and president of Inclusion Cafe, well, announcing they're working with Salvation Army, joining forces, and they've launched the Inclusion Cafe Training Academy. Very cool. And in this effort, the Academy is a 14-week program that's going to offer weekly sessions that are designed to equip participants with industry standard restaurant skills. How cool is that? And quoting here from Mr. Shack, he says, Our new training academy location marks an exciting milestone for Inclusion Cafe as we begin our commitment to fostering high-quality job training to employ an underutilized workforce. And that's all about the work of Inclusion Cafe, right? Trying to foster and encourage that workforce in a creative, innovative fashion. Well, kudos to Bill Shack and Inclusion Cafe. Okay, coming up March 30, this is a city-hosted free Easter egg hunt, or hunts. So you got Saturday, March 30, the annual Extraordinary Easter Egg Hunt, designed for kids with special needs. That's happening from 9 to 11 at Messer Park North Sports Complex out there on Jackson Bluff Road. That's cool. And then, let's see, what else is going on? Oh, and then later that day, you can hop over. Oh, this is really cool. Hop on over to Myers Park, there at Myers Park Drive, for the city's 65th Easter Egg Hunt. And that's going on in the afternoon from 1 to 3 o'clock. And that's designed for kids ages 10 and under. So all kinds of Easter egg hunts going on. March the 30th. Children participating in the egg hunts should bring their own baskets and bags and such like that. Okay, folks, that's what I've got for you here at the moment. Stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks. Chain of Parks Art Festival is highly anticipated year after year. In all of its history, has never failed to deliver on this promise to bring us closer to the world that is Tallahassee's art community, artists around this part of the world and across the country, even in various other places in the world, have made their trek annually to this now celebrated, highly anticipated, highly ranked, juried art festival. Yeah. So with that, it is always a pleasure to be able to take a few minutes in our schedule here to say, wow, is it already that time of year? Here we are in the middle of March, and the Chain of Parks Art Festival is coming up April 20 and 21. I believe that's correct. We're going to get into the details here because we're fortunate enough to have the person who knows. She knows stuff. Powell Kreese has been serving faithfully and well with the good folks at Lemoyne Arts, as it is now referred to. Isn't that right? Yes, mm-hmm. Lemoyne Arts. She is then now the festival manager, which is why we wanted her to be here to tell us more about this year's festival. Let's welcome Powell Kreese. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Again. Let me just brag on you a little bit.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Hang on. So she's a graduate of Sale High School Youth Leadership Tallahassee. Got her BFA in Fine Art from the University of North Florida in painting, drawing, and printmaking. She's got works of her own around town in various locations. Man alive. She was active as a designer, corporate design and such. Did some work backpacking through Europe. Wow. So you may gather from my remarks there how adventurous she is. And I think that that's fair because every year she just plunges headfirst into this mass of activity and work and coordination to make sure that this famous Chain of Parks Art Festival all comes together. How's that? Did I do you right?
That made me feel great.
Do you good? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So at this juncture, we're roughly about 30 days out.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
Yes. Deep breath. Let it out slowly.
Mm-hmm. We're ready.
We're going to, yeah, it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. You know it'll be great.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And it's going to be perfect. The weather will be absolutely perfect.
It's usually very kind to us.
Man, we've been so fortunate. Now, one of those other massive blessings, fortunate occurrences, is the work of Illustre Richardson. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
So this is a guy who earned his very well-respected place in our local art community. Happens that he's the artist in residence for the Riley House Museum and Resource Center of African American History and Culture, which also houses his historical works collection. If you have not given yourself a treat, go do that. Make the time. Go over there and be a part of this and immerse yourself in the works of Illustre Richardson, who is our guest as well today. Hello, sir.
Good morning. Good evening.
Afternoon. Day.
Afternoon.
Night.
Whatever it may be.
It's good.
It's
man.
Good.
It's
good.
When you're in the room, it gets really, really good.
Okay, come on.
Come on now.
Come on.
I was told to say that.
Okay.
I get
right.
A nickel for every...
Well, I accept.
Every gracious remark that I make, you know, I'm like a seal. You just throw me a fish. Let's talk a little bit about you because, I mean, come on. Words that describe his work, uplifting, inspiring, enlightening. Yeah. Born and raised right here in Tallytown.
Yeah.
Long yes. time Tallahassean.
Yes.
Began painting as a youngster. I think you said you were like in your early teens,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
You have your own studio here in town, and this fascination you have with local history and the people and places of North Florida. Tell us about that.
Well, working with the Riley House Museum kind of pushed me in that direction of historical events and, yeah. And preserving the historical segment of Tallahassee. And I've grown to love that because of the works I've done gives a message or give credit to a lot of the activities and events that I've been here since, well, born and raised here, and I've seen Tallahassee grow, and of course I was a part of that growth, and through my paintings I can record a lot of that growth of Tallahassee.
And you are, for this year's festival, the presenting artist. How is that referred to? He's the cover
artist. Mm-hmm. Correct.
For this year's festival.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my friends, I'm just telling you, you can make this a much better day for yourself if you will simply go to the Lemoyne Arts website. They've got this gorgeous piece of work entitled A Walk Along Morris Creek. Tell us about that work.
Yeah, Morris Creek is in Jefferson County, Monticello. And a friend of mine's invited me to their farm to do some paintings
okay.
of the farm.
Yes.
And, of course, it had creeks and ponds and all kind of gorgeous. I mean, you just can't make it up, like you say. It's just gorgeous. So that's one of the pieces that I really enjoy doing, that walk through that creek.
Clearly, just looking at this reproduction...
if you like nature, yeah. that's the piece for you.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you live in North Florida and you don't like nature,
it's a very nostalgic piece.
Isn't it?
You know, as somebody who's also born and raised in Tallahassee, I have many memories of playing in all of the little creeks hidden. And, well, I just think if you're from here, you know it. And it creates something that makes everybody have a personal reaction and association.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a good point. It connects with anyone who is familiar with, and even if you're new to town, you know, new to this part of the world.
Yeah, you'd be familiar with scenes like that.
This is what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Get in touch. Folks, if you want to see it for yourself, go to chainofparks.com. And not only will you get the opportunity to witness this firsthand, you'll learn all about this upcoming festival, Chain of Parks Art Festival. You certainly have news of this year's activities. We're going to get into some of that. What are some of the highlights that you're thinking of as you think about this year's festival?
Sure. Well, this is our 24th year, so just continuing to build.
And you don't look that old, honestly.
Oh, well, I've only been with the festival for 4 years.
That's right.
But
yeah, sorry.
It's been well established and chaired by Kelly Dozier, who's just done a remarkable job.
Hi, Kelly.
So we're building upon the success that we've had over the last 24 years and really expanding. I mean, this year there's tremendous amount of growth just in terms of participation, so much so that we've had to reconfigure some of our layouts just to make room for everyone. So we'll have over 160 fine artists this year, which is wonderful.
That is awesome.
Yes. And this year we've also added a folk art category. So while we are a fine art festival, we do really appreciate folk art. And so we're partnering with the Riley House and Le Moyne, and we're doing a collaborative dual exhibit. So at Le Moyne, we'll have an exhibit dedicated to local folk artists that have passed and maybe didn't get quite the appreciation that they deserved, and contemporary folk artists that are active today. Mm. Riley House will have a similar exhibit in tandem, and then at the festival, we'll have a special area dedicated to that.
How very cool. The inclusive mentality that is Le Moyne Arts. I think they have earned that quite well. Folks, we're going to continue this conversation. Lester Richardson, Powell Kreese, our guests, talking about Chain of Parks Art Festival. Stay with me.
After the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb, and there was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord rolled back the stone and said unto the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen." This Easter, may your heart be filled with the faith and wonder of that first Easter morning, now and throughout the year. A message of hope.
From Wood and Glass on South Monroe, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. For mirrors, shower and bath enclosures, tabletops and window glass, call 222-5781. Online at woodandglass.com. And Tony Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning, the highest industry standards, personal attention to every detail. That's Tony Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning. Call 385-3774, online at tonykellyinc.com. The very good-natured and very talented and inspiring Lester Richardson about the work that he has done over the many years that he has been a part of this arts community, artistic community, I guess you'd say. I'm a kind of, in my mind, Lester, you're just sort of one of those landmark artists. Mm-hmm. You know, you really kind of give us a point of reference.
Well, that's good. That's a good way to put it.
Well, because, I mean, I think you've come to us coming up out of what we are as a community, mm-hmm. our history, our culture, and all of that sort of thing. And then you give us the ability to see this, especially this natural world around us, mm-hmm. through your eyes.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to, when I first started, I had opportunities to go to other places because, well, you need to go because other places you may have a great opportunity to show your work.
I see.
But I wanted to stay here to have my work grow with Tallahassee, help me to grow. You know, if I can grow with Tallahassee, I think I'll stake my position as an artist in Tallahassee. Yeah. So that's just what I did. I stayed here and my work grows here in Tallahassee, and I'm pretty satisfied. I have a great following, not only here, but nationally.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. No doubt. On that topic, we often talk about the new Tallahassee, mm-hmm. Which I think is a fair statement in that when we look back through the decades, now we're in our 200th year. Yeah. Happy birthday, Tallahassee. But my goodness, I would like to suggest to you the idea that even in the last 20 or 30 years, the amount of change, the pace has picked up considerably.
Of course.
Would you agree with that?
I much agree with you. We just said that participation and overall growth of the art festival is growing leaps and bounds. That's a good sign of
That's
the art
indication.
Community is really paying attention and, of course, giving their customers what they need.
You got to ask yourself, I certainly do. Mm-hmm. You and I have been here a while. Mm-hmm. Pal, you grew up here as well. But unlike Lester and I, you could have gone elsewhere and said, yeah, I'm from Tallahassee. You chose to stay here. Now, Lester did the same. What's your motivation? Why are you still here?
Well, I did leave for about 10 years, which I thought was healthy for me because it really helped me appreciate Tallahassee.
So
I think there can be a tendency for people that are born and raised and never leave that they maybe don't see how wonderful it is. But then when you live in a few other cities, it starts to look extra nice. So yeah. I was very anxious to come back.
Very cool.
And I was delighted to see how much it had grown when I came back. I remember saying to somebody, when did Tallahassee get so cool?
Yeah.
And so it's just been really exciting. And that's part of what the Chain of Parks does is shows off our community to the nation. We're
sure
a nationally
does.
Ranked festival, and it's really, really about showcasing what we have to offer.
If I'm not mistaken, always, at least in recent history, in the top 4 or 5 in the country.
We've been in the top 100 for the last 11 years and then the top 10 for about 7 years.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. We were number 3, I believe, in 2019.
And yeah, and as I recall, that happens because those artists that are exhibiting their work are the ones that are
self-reporting.
They're reporting. Mm-hmm. So they're saying back to other artists, to our community, to the world, hey man, these people really have it going on. They know what they're
yes.
doing.
Yeah. Yes, I'd say our festival is a lot of word of mouth in terms of the fine art community, but Sunshine Artist is who does the ranking. They're a national magazine, and they collect surveys from artists throughout the country, and based on those surveys is how we get our ranking.
You know, Lester, it's not magical. If I'm not mistaken, people like Powell start the day after the festival concludes.
Yep.
Right?
Year round.
Like the Macy's Parade, you know, you gotta make sure you have enough gas for the balloons. But at that point, they're looking very critically at what went well, what didn't, what should we do differently, what can we add. As an artist, you get to participate in all this, but you're also involved in similar organizations with LeMoyne and, let's see, the Watercolor Society.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
I try to position myself to know a little about everything in the arts, the business side, the production side, the management. Hmm. That way I can maneuver my way around the traps that a lot of people experience in the arts, thinking they're going to do one thing, and then it turns out to be another thing. So if I can participate in boards, or production or festivals, or the festival itself, I know a little about everything. So I'll be more successful. Because I know how what you want.
What's needed in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the business
side of it.
Side of
right.
being a working artist.
Artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
so.
Historically has always been the challenge, right? People
yes.
who are, in my experience anyway, people who are creatives
it's not a good business.
Are not good business people, yeah. Right? Yeah. Is that a fair?
I'd say that's pretty consistent. Yeah. That's one of the things we loved about Alester's cover art piece is that while it's a gorgeous painting, it also really lends itself to marketing. That's something we really have to consider when selecting a piece is how is it going to look on a t-shirt? How's it going to look printed magazine ad?
Sure.
And sometimes really, really beautiful art just does not translate that way. So we were really delighted when we got to walk through his studio and we all kept looking at that one. We said, oh God, I think that's it.
Most of the time, it comes to me whatever inspires me, the inspiration behind, I like to, my figurative work, which is people, and I love people, I've noticed and I would say study people, and I would say the good parts. I mentioned inspiring. I look at you and see what's inspiring. Could I make an art piece of that? Yes, I can make an art piece.
Right.
Because the light from the studio is radiating on your hair and stuff. That will make a great emotional contrast piece.
Well, you have my permission to entitle the work Moose. That would be great. Don't you think, right?
Hey, I think there's an audience.
But it's more inspirational. What inspires me rather than mockability.
Okay, so you, and that applies no matter what the subject may be.
Whatever.
Interesting. Well, so we've gotten a little bit more understanding then of how this whole thing is coming together for this year. Do you have particularly unique or new things are going to happen? Because you've got 160 artists. That's new, and you've had to reconfigure how the whole thing is laid out there. Now, for the uninitiated folks, this is the chain of parks, okay? And that's downtown Tallahassee, Park Avenue on either side, north and south, between Monroe and, I guess, Gadsden. Is that, or more
correct.
Like? Yeah, so that's the location, which has always been such a wonderful, wonderful.
It's a beautiful
place
area
to be, right? Mm-hmm. And in and of itself, historic.
Mm-hmm.
So those of you who are a bit more interested in digging the history of downtown Tallahassee, it's worth the time. So new stuff, other things that are coming up. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back.
Sure.
All right. Folks, you're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year, and the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
We're talking a little bit then about some of the new stuff coming our way. Tell us about that.
So I'd say one thing that I'm especially excited about is the Retired Art Teachers of Tallahassee, who's just a little club of retired art teachers that would get together for lunch, have joined in, and they're sort of reinvigorating our children's park, which was always really fun, but we've almost doubled the participation.
Wow.
We'll have pop-up studios with free make and take crafts for kids. We have 4 heritage booths this year that will be talking about our local history, especially celebrating Tallahassee's bicentennial. We'll have entertainment down there the whole weekend, so that area is really growing thanks to their help.
How cool.
And then the Chalk Art Oasis is something we started about 2 years ago, and we just keep building and building on it.
I love that stuff.
That's an area where we'll have four professional street artists come and do these live, massive, beautiful, almost three-dimensional chalk pieces throughout the weekend. Wow.
And I know you've got live entertainment scheduled for the festival as well.
We do. Yeah. We've got local live entertainers on our main stage. That's mostly big bands and big dance groups.
Right.
And then in the Chalk Art Oasis and Children's Park, we'll also have some smaller acts and flamenco dancers.
Oh, man.
I'm really excited to announce that we just confirmed with Rickard's marching band that they're going to come through and do a whole procession through the parks.
Oh, I love that.
Sunday afternoon.
Well, cool. Go for Rickard's doing that. What do you love most about the job that you do with this festival?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm very passionate about it. But I think the thing I love most is that there are a lot of fun festivals in our community. There's not a lot of access to fine art in terms of museums, fine art festivals. There's just not a ton of access. And we have a lot of fine artists in our community and in the nation that I love getting people to get to see. There's a lot of people that come that are just there for the food trucks or there to hear music or have a beer and be outside. Yep. But then when they get there and they see the art, the quality, they get to talk to the artists about their inspiration. I see people that have never bought a piece of original artwork before light up and, you know, run to their car with their new paintings and sculptures.
Cool. It is a very cool thing.
Yes. And it's accessible. So, you know, there's all the different price points, all the different mediums, so that there's something for everyone. And that means a lot to me to see people excited about art.
And in that excitement, when you consider the years that you've been a part of this festival, right? You've seen the growth. We were speaking earlier, Lester, talking about how much Tallahassee has stepped up. And you said, well, upon your return, you were like, whoa, this is not the same Tallahassee.
No.
And it does feel like there's some momentum. And this is me. I envision a time when we will have the Tallahassee Museum of Art. And we will have...
Well, LeMoyne is here, of course.
Yes. Well, they'll be center to that. But I mean a facility that would cover 2 or 3 square blocks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm. So we've got that much, and a performing arts center for that matter.
That would be wonderful.
You know, when you talk about the major contributions of the local art community, performing arts, visual arts, the fact that we don't have that is glaring in my mind.
It's a missed opportunity.
It is just ridiculous. And here we are, the state capital for one of the largest states in the country, one of the fastest growing in the country, and we don't have that. So what's the deal?
Well, that's why we have things like Chain of Parks Art Festival to bring people to our community and to showcase what we can do with sufficient funding and support. There's certainly plenty of passion and energy that's ready to make Tallahassee a tourist destination.
Sure enough.
So we just need to get everybody on board.
And speaking of facilities, what LeMoyne has done in this last couple of years, just transforming their whole installation there. Of course, this charming house that has been their home for so long. But if you take the time and go back behind all of the back area and all of the educational facility now, and it's just gorgeous. And there's even
quite
like
the
a
Renaissance.
Little, yeah, there's like a kind of a gazebo there, performing area. It's fantastic.
Yes, we're really, really proud of how it's all coming
you
together
to be.
And how the community is responding to it. You know, it was a big shift and adjustment, but now we have a wonderful new education center, and we're working on having artist studios available. And
how cool is that?
We're doing a lot of private rentals, which is great.
Speaking of that, you mentioned it earlier, and the festival having enlarged their commitment to the children's park component. That is foundational, isn't it?
Absolutely.
LeMoyne has always had this determination to provide art education. And so with this expanded facility, that is enhanced, I suppose. Is that fair?
Oh, yes. Yeah? We have camps all year long for kids, and they sell out quick. So I always encourage people to be paying attention to it. But, I mean, it that building is full of laughter and creativity, and it's just so exciting to see little kids who are like, I don't know how to draw, learn, and then pursue it throughout their life.
How cool is that? Our oldest son, Morgan, actually taught a ceramics class at LeMoyne. He was getting his BFA at Florida State back in those days. Feels like 100 years ago, but because he's now 40. So what does that tell you? But he still talks about that experience with great fondness. And we were able to visit there that night.
Well, way back in the day.
Yeah.
In middle school at Griffin, we had an art contest where I won art lessons to LeMoyne. And art lesson was upstairs in one of the rooms, office rooms now, but that was way back in, the Yabba Dabba Doo days. But anyway, yeah, that was exciting to win and to have a real art lesson at a gallery.
It seems like it paid off well.
It paid off well.
Full circle. Now, of course, your work will be available to us at the festival. Are there any particular pieces, this one that we've been talking about, this A Walk Along Morris Creek, no doubt featured as the cover art for this year, but are there other pieces that we should particularly pay attention to that you'll have there for us?
I try to be theme-oriented. My next exhibit, I want to title it Our Precious Waterways, and that's preserving our precious waterways, our streams, lakes, and ponds, and ocean fronts, and that's that creek or that stream there is part of that precious waterways we need to protect, and we need to preserve
our aquaculture.
We slowly see them, you know, going down or decreasing to the point that it's kind of noticeable. The waterways is going away. I'm from the Lake Jackson area, so I've watched the lake go up and down and up and down. Each time it comes back, it come back a little less than before. So those precious waterways, and most of the paintings are of waterways is what I'm presenting.
And it seems to me, both of you, how appropriate that when we talk about what matters most, how it is that life can be best enjoyed and how we can better find our own place in the world. No better way than through the works of gifted artists like Lester Richardson, who comes to us and says, hey folks, we only have a little bit of time here to make sure that our waterways are cared for properly, make sure that the children who are coming up behind us have opportunity, courtesy of the good people at LeMoyne, to begin to develop their own skills, their own artistic sense. Wow.
Isn't that the beauty of art?
Indeed.
It helps inspire difficult conversations.
Indeed. And this is one of those conversations, and I appreciate
it. That's what I love about the festival, is it gives me an opportunity to have a conversation with my followers, you know, at one event.
At one event,
of course, the conversation is between me and my followers, and I can hear what they're saying, and they can see what I'm thinking. So that gives me the opportunity, and I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I've been with them since the beginning.
Yes.
So
well, my friend, we are excited with you and for you. Powell Kreese, Illustra Richardson, our guest today as we celebrate the coming of the Chain of Parks Art Festival in April 20 and 21 of this year. We're going to look forward to that, and we'll have more to say about this festival as we go forward in the weeks ahead. Both of you, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much, Brian.
A real pleasure. Stay with me, folks. I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Witten Glass has been taking care of families since 1945.
Experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best, like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures. eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass, and they provide precise installation.
Witten Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass. Online at wittenglass.com. Call 850-222-5781.
Welcome back to the second hour Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's only radio station, bringing you all local, all original, all the time. Online at moosemagnificat.com. We call it the sound of Tallahassee, because absolutely right. You find out that this is home to a pretty wide variety, speaking of the styles of music, you know, country, rock, jazz, blues, progressive, experimental. It's all here. I mean, when you can put the likes of Danny Bedrosian and Drew Tillman and Morgan Cerny all in one room, all doing different things. Yeah, right. And including that, people that are some of the newer artists in various capacity, country-styled singers, and it's all going on at moosemagnificat.com. You can download the free app on your phone, and that way you're plugged in, man. You pull it up, and it's nifty to be able to be driving down the road, and you've got your late model vehicle with Bluetooth interactivity. Now you're playing your Moose app through the phone or through the system in your vehicle. Yeah, love it. Do that all the time. And man, I'll tell you what, the station has just grown so much in the last several years, with now thousands of cuts of music, hundreds and hundreds of artists, all of them either having made Tallahassee their home for many years, maybe they were born and reared in Tallahassee, still living here, or maybe they live elsewhere, but they all call Tallahassee home. And so for us, that's simple, you know, the sound of Tallahassee. We're on Moose Saturday mornings at 9, and again, Sunday afternoons at 3, and Wednesday afternoons at 5:30. If none of those times happen to work for you well in your schedule, well, you can go to the website, and you can subscribe to the podcast, so that way your podcast app is being updated automatically from week to week. And you don't want to have any excuse for missing out on a show like we have today with Illustra Richardson and Powell Kreese, Steve Bamer. Man, these are folks that will speak to you passionately. And I don't think I'm exaggerating. There's such determination and energy and excitement about what they are doing and what they are representing in these conversations. Tallahassee is a very different town than it was even 5 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. And that emergence, that coming of age, I would say, for Tallahassee opens us up to all kinds of possibilities. Things that we have thought about, talked about in years past, all of a sudden become more viable, potential. Something like a performing arts center for Tallahassee. I mean, we're the capital of the state of Florida. And how about a museum of fine art that is, again, set in Tallahassee, independent of any educational institution, but open to all, you know, and in that way, better saying, this is who we really are. This is Tallahassee. One of the characteristics that I think has come about that is more evident, certainly among those that we have had the privilege of having here on the show, this thread of care for others. It's a constant. You recall Simon Sinek making this point that people don't follow what we do. They follow why we do it. And some have said, well, I don't know if I believe that or not. Well, you know, I think there's some valid
contribution there. I think there's truth in saying that when people capture or can connect with the motivation you bring, I think that's the human element here that is responsible for us imagining with the person bringing us their why, their purpose. So you've heard me say to you many times, we got to know who we are, what we're worth, and why we are here. What is our purpose? And so Seneca is quick to say, you know, the Wright brothers, they were the least likely. They were underfunded. They had to bring along spare parts every time because they knew likely they would crash and have to start over or rebuild, whatever. And yet they were the ones that everybody ended up following. Or his reference to Martin Luther King Jr. saying, I have a dream. I have a dream. And those of us who caught hold of that dream, we bought into his why, his purpose. He knew who he was. He knew what he was worth. And more importantly for us, he knew why he was going about the things that were his calling, his purpose in life. Well, notice too that in that process, in that exchange, there has to be on our side an identification of our own purpose. We have to take responsibility for why we do what we do. What are we about? And when you find, let's say, an organization like Lemoyne Arts, or an artist like Illustra Richardson, you start to tap into what is it that motivates this guy? Why does he do this? Well, if you are in touch with your own motivations, why do you do what you do? Why do you care so much about, let's say, the quality of life in Tallahassee? And then you begin to find out, well, this is a guy who cares very much about the quality of life. That includes, and maybe as a centerpiece, our waterways. And he's going to talk about that at length over and over again. He did so in the first hour of today's broadcast. He referenced it. But that's something that's central to his why, his purpose, his motivation. If you identify with that, well, that connectivity right there, that begins to replicate over and over and over again. And now the reality, the possibility of realizing something like a performing arts center, it isn't just some kind of fanciful wish. No, it begins to have some traction, we'd say. Because enough of us are beginning to tap into that same motivation, the quality of life, the contributions we make to one another, that we make to the region and to the world. I mean, that in and of itself is compelling. How many times have we had people here on the broadcast who come to us with their simple persistence, right? Maurice Mangum last week talking about persistence in his music. You know, and if you take the time to get to know that man and what moves him, why he does what he does, you can find him on Facebook, Maurice Mangum, or on YouTube. Go listen to his songs. His music goes on Moose Magnificat. In fact, he's got an EP that's come out this week, and some of that music is going to show up there. This guy has been here for many years, considers himself now a Tallahassean. We've adopted him, you know, and I think he's adopted us. But just a quick example then of somebody who says, I know why I'm doing this. I know why it's important to me, and challenges us to make those same sort of discoveries for ourselves. What do you care about? And if you care about the things that I care about, you know, it's one of the things that we find true in any kind of marketing efforts. We talk about values-based marketing.
because the things that you value most, you're going to identify among those businesses, for example, or other organizations who care equally about the same things. And that's what we're about here at Tallahassee Talks.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
For those of you who have frequented this here fine radio show over the many years, you'll know that Steve Bamer has found his way to our studios on more than one occasion. He's been a good resource for us, somebody who is able to speak clearly and concisely. But Bamer, in his ability to bring clarity to what is otherwise many times a very confusing, maybe overwhelming set of circumstances for caring for seniors in our country. Now, his part in this has been to help us better appreciate what that involves at a lot of different levels. You know, down here among us folks at ground level, you know, how do we go about finding facilities that are going to better provide for our loved ones, our family, our seniors, right? Our moms and dads, right? Maybe an aunt or an uncle. But then there comes the other side of that whole equation, I suppose. And that unless somebody is out there advocating on behalf of all of these places that we rely on, advocating on behalf of the caregivers, people that run the facilities and are doing their best to try to provide those kinds of services, who's doing that job? Well, once again, our good friend Steve Bamer, who happens to be the president and CEO of Leading Age Southeast, formerly known as Leading Age Florida. Well, he's that advocate, and he is here today to bring us up to speed. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Brian.
You're looking good, man.
Well, good to be back, and thank you for that.
It hadn't been that long ago, has it? I mean, I think you were here back. You know what it was? It was after session last year. Because you were talking then about some of the good things that you were able to achieve on behalf of all of us, really.
That's right. And more good things this year with the session that just ended.
Yeah. All right. So first order of business, you have a new name.
We do.
And that expansion means that you're now not just Florida, you're Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. I have been in Florida about 9 years. It'll be 9 years in May. Yeah. And we've focused all of our effort on delivering the best possible service we could for the folks who care for seniors around the state of Florida. And we've been able to grow that, and we've been successful, I think, at that. And that resulted in states around us coming to us and asking if we could help them do the same thing in their states.
And the benefit for your members, these folks that are the caregivers and the providers, how do they benefit by being a part of Leading Age?
Well, the primary item, the number one item you already mentioned, Brian, and that's advocacy, whether that's legislative advocacy with the executive branch, in the regulatory agencies. You know, we stand up for our provider members to make sure, I mean, we need good, smart regulation. We need to make sure, we've been saying this for years since I got to Florida, we believe in two kinds of providers, the good and the gone. and we need good regulation to make sure that we hold providers accountable. But we stand up for our members to make sure that those regulations don't become overly burdensome and redundant and bureaucratic and all the things we worry about.
Because so, in and of itself, that would be counterproductive, right? I
mean, sure.
You can't deliver the goods if every time you turn around, you've tripped over another rule somewhere you didn't even know about.
We see it all the time.
Yeah.
An increase in cost without an increase in quality.
Uh-huh.
More paperwork, more process, that sort of thing that does nothing to improve service to seniors. So advocacy is the first piece. That's the first way our members benefit. You know, we're at the Capitol during the legislature. We're in Tallahassee and Montgomery and Jackson and New Orleans in our states 12 months a year. So advocacy, professional development and education is another one. Our environment, I suspect everybody who comes to talk to you says this, but for us, it's really true. Mm. The environment in senior living is changing faster than anyone has ever seen it change. The types of residents we serve and their needs are changing. Their demands are changing. The regulatory environment is changing. So professional education and then communication. Mm. Part of that speed of change is how do you keep up with all the information you need to make sure you're running the highest quality, most innovative organization you can. Nick Vanderlinden, our senior director of operations, is the guy who makes sure our members across our four states have what they need when they need it. And it's for us, it's partly about making sure you get the information in time to make informed decisions.
Right.
But we look at it as helping our members see around the corner. How do we help them see what's coming that they haven't yet seen so we can prepare for the next change, the next big regulatory event, whatever it might be.
And indeed, and with that sort of anticipatory position, I would imagine that you're looking out more than just a few weeks. You're looking out maybe a few years ahead to try to give your membership, and then on behalf of all of us, a little bit more time to make those changes and preparations. Is that fair?
Sure. As a kind of a strategic point of view, the way we look at it is we do it in 5-year increments. And we say, if we could design the ideal environment for caring for seniors in our four states, what would that look like at the end of that 5-year period? And then what are the steps we've got to take in year 1, 2, 3, and 4 to get to that outcome in year 5? And so it really is a longer horizon strategic perspective, and we've had a lot of success in Florida. We're just getting started in our new states, but that approach has worked.
From what I understand, those new territories, those states, you're seeing increases in their membership, right? Because they realize, wait a minute, this thing it's got legs. We'd say it's really able to deliver on a promise.
Right.
So you're seeing an increase in membership in these other states.
That's right. We merged with Alabama in May of 2023. So we've been with Alabama a little less than a year. We've almost tripled our membership in Alabama. We have been, we merged Mississippi and Louisiana in mid-January. So they've been with us for about 2 months. Mm. We're already growing in Mississippi and we're already growing in Louisiana. So I think you're right. Associations are just like any business. You have to define and deliver on a value proposition and
be consistent in that.
Yeah.
Right?
And the whole, one of the primary underpinnings of these mergers was we have some scope and some scale and some experience in Florida that we can export to these other states,
right.
Amplify our mission, which is to say serve more seniors in a greater region. Hmm.
In the face of all of this massive advancement, this change that you're having to accommodate, all of us are having to accommodate then.
It's enormous. It changes in the business model, just the way senior living businesses operate, changes in the requirements.
How so? Give us an example of that.
One of the more interesting changes that we're seeing now, you know, our organization historically served primarily nonprofit providers.
Yeah.
We're still primarily nonprofit, but we serve providers of all tax status. For-profit, nonprofit. One of the interesting things that we're seeing is real estate investment trusts have heavily gotten into the senior living business. Mm-hmm. You know, for them, it's a real estate investment. Mm-hmm. For us, this is an environment where your parents deserve to deliver the highest possible quality of care. And so bridging that gap, the nexus between those two things can be very challenging at an operational level, as you can imagine, also at a legislative level. The law gets written on the assumption, the sort of historic assumption, of the business model the way it used to be. Single site, local community, local board of directors that everybody knows, mm-hmm, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When a REIT owns the property, there's no board of directors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a little bit technical, but that drives changes throughout the continuum of care. And then, of course, you've got, you know, the White House, rightly so, is focused on continuing to drive quality in America's nursing homes, and that's exactly what they should be doing. But one of the ways that they've focused on doing it is by mandating minimum staffing requirements in all 50 states. We have staff minimum staffing requirements in Florida already. That's not a new concept to us. The challenge is somewhere north of 200,000 workers in senior living have left the field since COVID started in March of 2020. And many of them are not coming back. So you can raise the staffing requirement, but if there aren't more people to do the work, the staffing requirement is an example of more cost. It's impossible to achieve, and obviously it won't drive quality. So those are the kinds of things that we're dealing with that are changing all the time.
So then your role in part as an organization is to come back to those representatives of the federal government to say, hey, great idea, but ill-timed, because even though we'd love to say, yes, these minimum requirements are entirely valid, but nobody did any homework here. We don't have the supply. So what are you going to do to make adjustments on behalf of our members? We're going to get part of that answer when we come back. Great. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks, and we're talking with Steve Boehmer, who graciously is giving of his time and bringing us up to speed with all the good people at Leading Age Southeast. Stay with me.
Stay prepared for severe weather all year long. Have a plan. Have what you need on hand. Stay in touch with important information. And know the service providers you can trust. Hello, I'm Brian Cerny. Tallahassee Prepared was created to keep you and I informed and prepared for severe weather 365. Go to TallahasseePrepared.com. It's there for you 24/7, because staying prepared is more than a season. It's an attitude. Learn for yourself at TallahasseePrepared.com.
Here comes Leading Age, again, in this advocacy sort of role, to try to communicate better, try to connect with those components of this conversation, the people who are a part of that conversation. That's got to be a bit frustrating for you at times.
It can be.
Yeah.
It definitely can be. But we think of that job, that's an education job. It's our job to educate policymakers and regulators about the reality on the ground, about what's possible.
So they're making better decisions, maybe more better informed decisions.
And we just succeeded. I think it was last week. You know, we succeeded in delaying this effort to impose these national staffing standards.
Yes.
And the success is not the delay of the staffing standards. There should be staffing standards. If one thing is clear, it's that high quality staffing drives high quality outcomes in nursing homes. 100% behind that concept.
Sure.
The challenge, as you mentioned, is the supply doesn't exist.
Right.
So the issue is not saying no to staffing standards. The issue is saying not this way and not at this time. How can we come up with an approach that guarantees seniors have the quality they deserve in a market with 3 or 4% unemployment and where folks have just fled the field in large part because of COVID. So our job is to tell those stories on the one hand, help policymakers and regulators understand what's really happening in Ocala or in Natchez, and provide the data and the policy ideas, the suggestions for here's a way where we can achieve what you're trying to get to, but in a way that's practical.
And in that capacity, if I'm one of your members, let's say I'm representing one of those care facilities, what do you say? How do you help?
Well, so
do you get involved in that sort of conversation, I guess?
It's happened, as you can imagine, and much of this goes back to COVID, but it's happened a lot in the last 4 years. And so we do get involved in it from the perspective of, again, sort of how do we help negotiate a solution that gets us the quality outcome we want, that we all expect and that our seniors deserve, but that we can functionally and operationally deploy. That's a practical thing. So that's part of it. The other part of it we don't get involved in, but the solution more often than not in the last 4 years has been they close beds. The providers, if you can't staff them, you can't offer them. Mm-hmm. And so we have one member, I think it's been so, I can't believe it's been 4 years since the COVID thing, since the start of
it
COVID.
It does seem a bit odd, doesn't it?
We have a member, so I think this was in 2022, has about 750 nursing home beds all across the state of Florida, just in Florida. Mm. Took 250 of those nursing home beds offline because they couldn't staff them. Mm. These are five-star, high-quality nursing home beds that are no longer available to the older adults in Florida. And as a practical matter, there was no choice. They couldn't staff them, so they couldn't offer those beds. And that's been common.
So that means they didn't close their doors, but they had to reduce sizably their capacity. Mm-hmm. That's not good for me as a person with an elderly member of my family. And I find out that, well, okay, the availability that was already limited, we'll say, challenging, just got a little more challenging, right? Because right. there are just that many fewer spaces available, beds available.
Right. And that's, I think that's a twofold problem for the public. There's there's the generic access problem.
Right.
Can you find a nursing home bed for a family member when you need it? But then the more specific and important question in our view at Leading Age Southeast is, can you find the right nursing home bed? Mm-hmm. It isn't a question of, is there a place for my father to lay his body down? Mm-hmm. It's, is there a place where he will receive five-star quality, where I can trust that he's going to be well cared for.
And really matches who he is more mm-hmm. so and his lifestyle and the things that he has. Mm-hmm. And we're not even talking about the financial side of this. We're just talking about the human operational side of that. When you are able to speak back to your membership and they're coming to you and you've talked about the educative role that you play, mm-hmm. are you providing a training, I suppose, or education for your membership?
Sure. Yeah. On all kinds of subjects.
That might
be one of them.
Yeah.
The challenges, we call it in transitions of care.
Okay.
And so sometimes that's moving from one level of care to another, from assisted mm-hmm. living, for example, to skilled nursing in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just moving physical locations. That's, you know, for seniors, especially for older adults who have, you know, other physical kinds of challenges.
Right.
Just moving, as you say, can be very difficult. So we provide education on that. We're always educating members on changes in the law and changes in regulation because it happens all the time. But we're also, this goes back to that concept of helping our members see around the corner. We've talked before about the baby boomers and how they're different. You and I have talked about that.
Right.
And, you know, that wave is hitting now. And
big time.
Those residents, as we've talked about before, have very different desires, expectations,
yep.
and those kinds of things. So we've got a series now that's aimed not at our members, but at our members' boards of directors.
Mm.
What does strategic visionary governance look like when the largest wave of retirees in the history of this country is crashing now, and they want something very different from what you offer? Mm. How do you govern through that sort of thing? So we've got a series out now about governance. You know, we've talked about this before, too. We represent folks who provide affordable housing for low-income seniors, which mm-hmm. is a segment of Florida's population that we are unique in representing. No one else represents low-income seniors in that way.
Mm.
We have a series, an educational series now that helps our members understand how to take advantage of tax credit programs and other things to build more affordable housing. If one message has been clear in this state in the last 2 or 3 years, it's that there's a housing crisis.
No kidding.
That conversation rarely puts this fine a point on it, and that is, I forget the numbers, but the largest percentage of homeless people in Florida in Florida are 65 and over.
Yeah.
And we aren't talking as much as we should be about how
about
do we provide
that.
Housing.
Yep.
Safe, affordable housing where someone can age with integrity in place.
All right.
And we're the ones doing that.
I want you to put your counselor hat on.
Okay.
Because I'm going to sit here and ask you, okay, Steve, you're scaring me because my mom is already, you know, 68. She's living with us. We're doing our best, but it's clear that within the next 4 to 5 years, we're probably not going to be able to give her the kind of care that she needs.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's been diagnosed, but we're starting to concern ourselves with mental acuity and such, okay,
sure.
or health issues in general. So here I am today talking to you, Mr. Counselor Steve Bamer. What would you advise me to do? How do I get ahead of this if I can?
Well, the first thing I would do is direct you to someone who's actually an expert in that kind of counseling. And we've got...
I've already talked to my psychiatrist. Now I'm talking to you.
We've got about 350 of those experts across four states now who we could point you to.
Well, that'd be good.
There's a... You know, one of the things that we...
Let me interrupt you because that's an expanded capacity now because you are Southeast. Okay, well, we'll come back to that. You were about to say.
I'd love to talk about Southeast. I was going to say, I'm not sure how... I know that the senior living system, the continuum of care for older adults is fragmented and complicated.
Right.
And I'm not sure how well-educated the general public is on all of the options that are available.
I don't think we are at all.
In your case, I might say, there are lots of home and community-based options. Assisted living in a nursing home might not be the best thing for you.
Okay.
There are places that our family members can go. I don't love this term, but the industry term is adult day, where there's sort of an adult daycare program for adults.
Right.
Home health is an option. Private duty nursing is an option.
Lots of options. And if I come to your website, that will be helpful to me in my search, you think?
Or, sure.
Yeah.
If you come to us and you say, I live in Tallahassee or I live in Orange Beach or wherever it is that you live, and I'm looking for high quality home health.
Yeah.
And in fact, we get those questions, interestingly, Brian. As you can imagine, you know this.
Yes.
A lot of people who live in Florida aren't from Florida. So we get calls from family members.
I'm one of those people, yeah.
Me too.
Okay.
We get calls from family members who live in New Jersey who say, you know, my parents live in Indian River and they need home health care. Do you know anyone who can help with that? And we say instantly, here's a list from our website of our members in that area who provide that high quality service.
Very cool. Talking to Steve Bamer, who really, you know, he gets bored easily. So he decided to just, I don't know, put on more hats, including counselor, newly appointed. He is the president and CEO of Leading Age Southeast. He's our guest. We're going to continue this conversation in just a moment.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. Well, that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios, because, you know, I do need a little shine from time to time. And my friends at Merry Maids can make it happen with guaranteed satisfaction, screened and trained employees, bonded and insured performance, even a free consultation. Merry Maids can customize cleanings to fit most budgets and fit your busy schedule with cleanings on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, or an on-call basis. Merry Maids will deep clean your home on that first visit, something that you've probably been wanting to do, but you don't have to. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's clean. Right here in Tallahassee, call 386-2205 or find them online at merrymaids.com. That's 386-2205.
We're back. We're talking to Steve Bamer, whose services to others include a seat on the Florida Palliative Care Coalition Steering Committee and the University of Central Florida Senior Living Management Advisory Board. He's a member of the Florida Society of Association Executives, FSAE. So, like I said, he doesn't need a hobby. Native of Wyoming, father of six. I don't know, Steve. I mean...
You only get so much time on the planet, Brian. Let's use it up.
I mean, that's the one thing we can't buy.
That's right.
We cannot buy time. With that in mind, the clock is ticking, and we were, you know, kind of digging a little deeper with this whole business of how we try to get maybe a little bit ahead in thinking about where do we go, how do I find those resources with the expansion now. More than Florida, right? So we've got Alabama, Mississippi,
and Louisiana.
And Louisiana. You're coming to them with service. What are you learning as they come back to you?
Wow, that's a fabulous question. One of the elements that we explored in considering these mergers was the possibility that we, as you say, we would be able to export some of our knowledge, certainly our resources, but our knowledge and experience from Florida to these other states. But we were also acutely aware that we would learn things from the other states too. It's early. Well, one of the first things we've learned is that high quality providers are high quality providers. Our members in Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama are exactly the same as the providers in Florida. They serve different populations in different ways with different demographics. But in terms of a mission orientation toward quality, they're exactly the same. That wasn't a surprise to us.
Well, that's good news, isn't it?
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Right. The mergers would have failed if that weren't true.
I was going to say, yeah, we got a problem.
We got to align culture first.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we're learning, we expected this, and you know this if you watch the news nationwide, that a political agenda that starts in one state often shows up in other states. And so we're already seeing that, where you know, issues that we dealt with in the Florida legislature 2 years ago, we're now dealing with in the Alabama legislature. We're seeing them in Louisiana. We're also seeing barriers to growth in other states where there's a regulatory barrier or a statutory barrier that prevents the development of new senior living options in those states. Those are issues that we dealt with in Florida years ago as well.
And those policies based in just old thinking, they're not in tune with some, because you talked earlier, there are lots of options here, and it's not monolithic. There's a lot of different ways that you can try to provide care. And maybe they're just not in touch with that, or how does that work?
Sometimes I think it's just legacy, Brian. I don't think it's negligence or
it's just they've done it intentional for so long.
That's how the law was written when it was written, and it just hasn't been updated. And sometimes you need fresh eyes, and so we take a look at it, and we'll say we resolved that in Florida 20 years ago, and we think we know how to help you do it. Yeah. So we are learning about those states now in a lot of ways, and I'm certain. You know, we have a member in the Panhandle that is an Air Force retirement community for Air Force enlisted vets and their families. We now have a member in Biloxi that is a military community. So we are learning about the different needs of different retiree demographics and how we can help them. And it turns out, as you won't be surprised, we're much more alike than we are different. And the problems in our four states are much more alike. The details can be different. The process can be different. You know, the steps in the legislative process aren't exactly the same. Right. Seniors, older adults still want and deserve high quality care. There are hundreds of providers now across our four states that are our members who are interested in providing that care. The challenges for getting there are the same in every state. It's just that some states have moved at different paces than others. And so we are finding that the challenges are similar. The goals of our members are similar. And our ability, it turns out, in the early going here to help them is similar across all four states too. The burden comes when the regulation, you know, this is the most common, I think, manifestation of it, where there's a new rule that gets promulgated and the rule requires new reporting, which means somebody whose job in many cases, their only job is tracking and reporting on data, which in a lot of cases is already being tracked and reported somewhere else. So now the community, the provider, has to hire a person to deal with that particular regulatory requirement. And that FTE has no impact on the delivery of high quality care. That's usually where we see the cost, not through licensure and
fees.
Sort of
a hidden cost in that respect, or backstage. Yeah.
Right.
But do you get involved in those kind of conversations? Are you trying to say back to the state legislature or the federal government, guys, I know you're trying to help, but this is not helping.
Sure. That happens all the time. We participate in meetings with the Agency for Healthcare Administration, which regulates nursing homes and assisted living, with the Office of Insurance Regulation, which regulates continuing care retirement communities. And those conversations often are about, we see what you're proposing in this particular regulation or in this rule that follows from the lawmaking process. Here's what that's actually going to mean, and here's how we think we can help.
Have kinda... you thought through those consequences?
Exactly right.
And you're helping them do that. You know, you referenced this earlier in our prior conversations over the years. We've come to this rather, I suppose, stressful realization, should be stressful for all of us to consider that rising expectations among residents, seniors, declining ability of facilities to provide because of staffing issues, or just the cost of being able to maintain a sort of, let's call it, a resort environment, I don't know, or a very high-end sort of, you know, given the standards for, I don't know, Wi-Fi and cell phones and, you know, digital and all that going on. And yet the funding available through third party, whether it's public or even the fees that people can afford to pay for such things, there's a kind of, I don't know what to call it, sort of a no man's land. It's that point at which this perfect storm begins to convene on lack of opportunity. I can afford this, but the disparity between what my dad really wants and what we can afford to do has widened considerably. Is that fair?
It is. There's actually a term in our field for that. We call it the missing middle. There are programs for folks, you know, for low income members of our four states, all 50 states. And there are, and Florida is blessed to have some of the most high-end, luxurious retirement communities you will see anywhere in the world. They are incredible. But there's that missing middle segment. You know, you earn too much to qualify for federal subsidy programs, but not enough to spend $6,000 a month on a high-end assisted living.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Right.
And so this is an area where I think nonprofit providers don't get enough credit, probably. There's real innovation happening now among our members to create offerings for people who are in that missing middle
gap,
that have all the things that you've talked about, the Wi-Fi and the digital access, robotics, artificial intelligence, all of that, but at a price point that fits for most of us. And so we're doing that work. We have members in Florida now who provide that missing middle link for folks. It's not big enough yet. There's not enough of it yet, but it's coming.
That needs to grow, and maybe Leading Age Southeast will be able to help us in that growth experience.
Certainly our members will.
Bringing more and more of those people together and sharing ideas. That's sort of the point, isn't it? That there's this collective awareness of what needs to happen, and teamwork is always good, right?
Yeah, it's the network of a good association is very strong in a lot of ways.
Well, we're fortunate that you're a part of that, Mr. Boehmer. Thank you for being a part of this broadcast today. Steve Boehmer, President and CEO for a wonderful organization, Leading Age Southeast. Folks, let's just say thank you to Steve for sharing all the information. It's a lot.
Oh,
but
my
pleasure. You're always good at it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for being here. Folks, we're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio, online all the time, with all local, all original artists playing their songs just for you. We call it the Sound of Tallahassee. Carl Cerny is our executive producer, and I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 75 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whittenglass.com.